And his name is Bradford from Northern California. As you heard there, he has given us permission to record his share for the Hickner Library. This will be turned off after the main share. So at this point, I'm now going to pass you over to Bradford to share his experience and strength and hope with us this evening. Thank you very much, Bradford. Over to you, brother.
Hi,
Brad skipped himself out accidentally. He'll come back in. Just hold on.
thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Christine. Sorry about this, guys. Don't take a moment.
Father's father, and nobody had time to spend with my grandmother, and I'd already started going to different 12-step fellowships before I found Narcotics Anonymous. But I went and stayed with her. I also had broken up with a relationship and kicked everybody out of my house at that point, boarded it up for about 6 months and stayed with my grandma. And she told me a lot of stuff about generations of both sides of my parents' families. And so there's a lot of stuff that I came to understand in that 6 months. That was in 1985. I spent another 4 years going to over a half a dozen fellowships. Well, I started, I guess, in 83 or something, but I still went to different fellowships. And I had a family intervention on May 21st of 1989, and I was not told that that was the purpose of the meeting at my grandmother's house, but I got up there and there was one woman that I did not recognize, and she was standing up by the fireplace hearth, and everybody except for me had pieces of paper in their hand, and I was looking at three generations of my family and one cousin on my mother's side. And so they read everything that they had written out on what they thought was happening in my life and, you know, what my options might be. And everybody ended with, you know, love your brother or love mom or whatever. And then it got to my father and he just signed it Morton McDonald. And the last thing he said on his paper is that you can follow this directive or you can change your last name. So I figured, well, you know what? I've been trying to get clean for quite a while, and this is my way to do it. Nobody could take me in for the prior 6 months or so. And so I went up to a recovery, a residential-based recovery program in Orangevale, east of Sacramento. 28-day program. I wound up staying there for, I forget, I think over 4 months. So that, and the first meeting I remember going to there was an NA meeting. And as soon as I started hearing the readings, I'm going, why did nobody send me here? You know, it was really, it fit me perfectly, you know, and it didn't matter what or how much I used, who my connections were, what I had done in the past, but only what I wanted to do about my problem and how y'all could help. I'm going, this is it. This is my tribe. This is my family. And I had one using dream that I remember during that period, and it was actually going down to a 7-Eleven, you know, quick shop store kind of thing, and there was you had to walk in on one corner and then leave on the other corner, and the back wall of that last wall was all alcoholic beverages. And I'm waiting in line. There's only a couple of people in front of me, but I'm waiting in line, and the bottle started talking to me. And I said, "Try me, tell me." And it started driving me nuts. So I jumped over the cash register in my dream, and I left the tub of ice cream that I was getting for the rehab. And I woke up in a sweat. And that was the only major dream that I remember about using. It surprised me because I also didn't realize it, but I had a pretty substantial addiction to opiates, and I thought if I didn't, you know, inject them, then I wouldn't get addicted. And I was a driver for a bunch of heroin addicts, so I always made sure I got mine at the delivery point from the seller as well as, you know, the people that I was driving. So I was getting double dosed for years doing that, about 5 years. So anyway, I thought that I started at the age of 12, but that was how I prefaced my first 4-step in Narcotics Anonymous was I just wanted some clarity on, because my first sponsor for NA was actually the guy that ran the rehab that I was at. And I said, "Well, how do I get going on this? What, I don't think I have any resentments." And he said, "Well, I've met your family. You know that." And I said, "I'm sure you've got resentments." And I'm going, "Yeah, but I don't, you know, I can let that go." He says, "Well, pray about it." And so I went back and redid my first 3 steps because I didn't grow up with religion. I had done the 3rd step prayer out of AA with my first NA sponsor, who was more connected to AA. And then he let me find another prayer anywhere in his library. And I actually found a Native American prayer that sat well with me. And so that became my 4-step prayer. So I prayed about resentments, and I prayed about what did I do before the age of 12, because I could remember a lot of my using for 24 years or so, but I could not really remember a whole lot about coming up before that. And so in about a half a dozen more 4 steps, I went back a couple of years every time I did another 4-step, and it turns out I started drinking when I was still shorter than a card table, which I figure is average of 30 inches. So I was probably, you know, somewhere between 2.5 feet or something, and I don't know, 30 inches, I don't know. But I started stealing mixed drinks when people would put their drinks down after happy hour, as they called it, and go in for a potluck dinner at my parents'. And I had several other little things that I started remembering before I got to that really early one. And they included making 30-gallon like plastic refuse can of plum wine when I was about 11 or 10. And when I was 9, I compared Dos Equis beer in Mexico to Rainier Ale in America. And I asked my dad how he could drink Rainier Ale when there was something as good as Dos Equis. And I don't remember trying the Dos Equis. I do remember making the comparison. I was adamant about that. So all this stuff started coming back. And so that would suggest that I'd been definitely having blackouts, alcoholic blackouts at the age of at least 9 and 10 and 11. So I started a lot earlier than I thought. So at the age of 12, I tried my first joint, and I got loaded on the first one. My friend, best friend, didn't get loaded that day, but I got loaded, and I immediately started finding other drugs. My great grandmother died, I think, when I was 10, and I didn't remember this until relatively recently. But she died of she went into a coma after trying to commit suicide by ingesting 2 bottles of sleeping pills. And I remember that this was like when I was pretty young too. I was maybe 10, and I remember taking those pills and separating the, or they're not pills, they were capsules, and I would break open the capsules, sliding them apart, take a bunch out, and then put the capsule parts back together and put them back into the bottle. So I may have started doing sleeping pills before I started smoking pot too, and it's a process of figuring out, when did I really start this and when did I start that. I also decided I would never get hooked on opiates, because there was a guy when I was, I think, 14, and I was already selling drugs. There was an older guy who was probably in at UC Berkeley, so he's probably, under 21, but he was old to me. And he I confronted him because he was walking around with a briefcase like I was, going on my route and selling heroin. And I didn't know anything about Crystal White, but I went over to his place to have this discussion, and he had this huge pile of white powder on his coffee table, and he had a straw, and he suggested that I, fix myself a line. And he walked out of the room saying, "Do you want anything out of the refrigerator?" I'm saying, "No, I'm a, water, no, milk, no." And I fixed myself like a foot long, half inch deep line, and I was out for like all day and most of the night. And he was getting ready to roll me up in a rug, put me in the back of his pickup, drive me down to San Francisco Bay, and roll me off the pier. And that would have been the end of his competition, but I came too. So, and I forgot about that too till one of those later 4 steps. And I said I'd never inject. And when I was my first year of school, I went up to Nevada, sold all the pot I had, and my partner at the time was a dishonorably discharged Vietnam vet, because he'd been caught keeping his battalion happy in the foxholes with opiates and injecting. So we had sold all the pot, and I did inject once with methamphetamines, and I hallucinated. I said, "I'm never going to do that again." So I had a lot of drugs in my past. I also swore I'd never do psychedelics after 1970, I think, when I graduated from high school. But last time I remember was a half a cup of coffee with my best friend from junior high going up to the mountains. We went all the way through the Sierras, wound up in Bishop on the far side, and totally wiped, emptied of a camping ground area. We were making too much noise, I guess. But anyway, that's typical of my history. So what happened though was I really related to Narcotics Anonymous. I had tried in over a half a dozen different fellowships, and I could not stop doing one thing or another. I just did one fellowship at a time, and I was codependent, and I got hung up on sex and drugs and rock and roll, and everything but the music basically left at that rehab. I came back to the San Francisco Bay Area, the East Bay, back to Berkeley, and everybody had really emphasized that I had better go to a meeting before I even go home. And so I found a meeting. It was out in San Leandro, which is about a 30-mile round trip from my house, but I figured, better do it. So I went out and I got a schedule, and I was set. And early on, the first meeting I decided to go to was about 2 blocks from my house. It was on a second story of a little brown shingle kind of place, and the storm door was or a security door was padlocked with a big padlock. And I looked at it, and I'm going, "This does not look like an open meeting." And so I called the hotline, and they said, "You should go to area and tell them about that." So I had to find out about areas and all that. And they put me to work. Any meeting you go to that's not open, let us know. And then I found out about the phone line, and the person that had started that up was the only one answering the phones, and she was in college and needed help, so I signed up. So I got into service really early, and I love making coffee, so I did that. And pretty soon I was, you know, doing all the things we eventually do in service, and I've held on to that until COVID. And I've had a fair amount of sponsors and sponsees over the years. But COVID has changed my life in a major way. I'm legally blind at this point. I did have cataract surgery, but it basically got me up to 20/150. So I'm still probably legally blind. But my peripheral is much better. So I am not paying attention to the time. So if, and I can't see the time. I'm going to have to figure out something on this. But anyway, Narcotics Anonymous has afforded me a whole new way of life. And I got married in recovery. I got divorced in recovery. I decided the best thing I could do when I got clean to sort of do a indirect amends to the community, as I had been a driver for drugs, I would become a driver for those who probably should not be driving. And so I started off driving school buses in West Contra Costa and Alameda County, and then but that was minimum wage, but it got me license for commercial driving and stuff. And I went to I was going to go to an interview for Alameda County Tow Company, and that was the day of the Loma Prieta earthquake. And that was weird because the tow yard was underneath this huge overpass kind of superstructure, which collapsed, and I'm not sure if it actually took out the tow yard, but the guy was definitely not there and was not going to do an interview. I went on to check, you know, other ideas, and I applied to AC Transit, which is the county transit for Alameda and West Contra Costa counties, and they took me. And so I went through the hoops, I went through the training, and I drove for them until 1997, when my, 96, I was driving a bus that didn't have enough air in the suspension. It was a prototype. I was testing it out, and it bottomed out, and I herniated four discs in my lower back, and it tore my right macular tissue. 1997, the same thing happened with the buses now on the regular system schedules, but they still hadn't fixed the, you know, inadequate air pressure in the suspension system, and I herniated five discs and tore my left macular tissue, and that was the end of my career. Boom, right like that, April 5th of 1997. So I've been prematurely retired since then. 1997 was a great opportunity to do some spiritual growth, and I went to a retreat, a 3-day retreat, which was not directly 12-step related, but I could tell that the facilitator, who was a pastor, had a 12-step background. It was just very apparent to me anyway. And I went for another 6 months for a mastery class on that whole thing, so I could also facilitate those. And I spent the entire summer going to campouts. I had set up my vacation times with AC Transit around conventions and campouts. So, and they changed the rules in the union about how you can arrange for your year's worth of campouts and conventions, basically, for me anyway. So you could no longer do that for the year. And I just signed up for every weekend. And if I didn't want to take that weekend, then I'd take it off the books. But a lot of people copped an attitude about that. But anyway, I'm rambling. The main thing, I think the core of Narcotics Anonymous is that, you know, any addict can stop using and lose the desire to do drugs. That's our basic promise. We don't go into the, you know, the other programs I've heard, you know, like the seven deadly sins and I think seven promises too. I forget. It's been probably 35 years since I was active in that. But we just have one promise. It's really simple. And I love the steps. I love the traditions. I'm really happy that the traditions got a book for them, and we got a daily tradition, a tradition a day. The SPAD is how it's, I don't know if it's come out officially, but you can get a download, a preview copy. So I, you know, this is my life. And Zoom and Blue Jeans and telephone meetings has kept me going for like about the last 3 years. My left eye hemorrhaged in 2019, just before my birthday. So I had about a 3 month head start on social distancing, and I'm definitely, I consider Higna and In Times of Illness in London and about four other illness meetings to be some of my home groups. And I do a 7 day a week meeting called Rogue Redwood in Oregon, and do an after meeting quite often that lasts up to 5, 6, 7 hours after the meeting ends. And I stay hooked up, and this is basically my life of 25 plus years of retirement, and I am busier than I've ever been. So I'm going to call it quits at that. I don't know how long I shared. I hope it hasn't been too long, but I love you all, and thank you everybody doing service at the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Brother Brad.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you so much.
Good man.